feeling is that light rail is it's okay when used properly. It's fine for it doesn't work downtown because it becomes like a, we already have trolleys in downtown, we have buses downtown, and they are suited for our short city blocks where they stop at every other corner. But a light rail is fine for bringing commuters in from the suburbs. Probably what they should have is more commuter lines that kind of get to some kind of central station within the city limits, and then commuters go from there to their places of work, taking buses or trolley or whatever. But which is what they do in other cities, where you have the commuter lines, and they, like my dad in New York City, he used to take the Long Island Railroad into the city, and then he'd take the subway to work, and that's sort of, you divide up the sort of the transportation task, and that's what other cities do. But
Perry, I just wanted to let you know you have one more caller really quick. Harry,
okay,
wanted to make some comments.
One quick call. You're on the air.
Hey, this is Harry. Thank you for taking my call. Do you know whatever happened to the water bill that was on the ballot?
I'm not sure. No. What exactly was that water bill?
Well, they tried to sneak it in. It was something that the water bill wanted money to do something. The Water Bureau was like, they have $5 billion. They didn't need any money. And I'm glad that the Metro didn't pass, because there's a lot of people who don't want it, even though they're kind of forced it down our throats. I mean, example, look what happened to Vancouver. Even though they can put a light rail across I-205, the people in Vancouver voted, no, we don't want a light rail in Vancouver. But, like, they're trying to build another bridge to replace the I-5, and, of course, they want to put light rail, but they passed a law saying, no, we don't want light rail in Vancouver. But anyway, all the news reports, that no one mentioned about the Water Bureau bill that they passed, even though they have billions of dollars, you know.
Well, our show is over for now. I want to thank you for your call, and I think I will, as soon as I get off the air, I will check into that, see what happened with that water measure. But anyway, thank you for your call.
No problem. Thank you.
This has been Fight the Empire. Our show is coming to a close. We've been talking about national politics and also local politics. So stay tuned to KBOO, your radio station.
You're listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM, K282 BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220 HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. Coming up next is Radio Zine.
I'm Wendy Ring.
And I'm Brian Curtis.
And this is Cool Solutions, stories about climate action from the bottom up. People getting together to cut climate pollution and make their communities better places to live. Hey, it's October. Time for our annual Halloween episode. In the past, that's meant how to tame energy vampires, those home appliances which suck energy even when they're off. But as our understanding of the path to 100% clean energy has deepened, we realize that storyline is
antiquated,
oversimplistic,
and an insult to modern vampires everywhere.
Today's vampires are sophisticated, diverse, digitally connected, and socially engaged. But one thing hasn't changed. They're still thirsty.
And so, without further ado, we bring you Vampire Version 2.0.
What have we got?
ENT said they found him passed out in an alley. That's all we know.
Pallor, rapid heart rate.
Look, puncture wounds on the neck.
The patient's blood pressure is dropping.
He's lost too much juice. Needs a transfusion, stat, or it's gonna be lights out for him. Call Om Connect.
That poor guy sounds like he's at death's door. I don't think chanting Om is going to help.
It will, if we're talking about OHM, not OM, and if the patient is an electrical grid.
That's pretty much what happened last month in California, when a record-breaking heat wave increased the demand for electricity beyond what was available.
I have an app on my phone from the California grid operator, and as temperatures in Southern California hit 120 degrees, the thing started alarming every 5 minutes. I watched in horror as the grid alerts rose from stage 1 to stage 2 to stage 3, knowing that that's when the blackouts start and people lose power to their air conditioners and fans. Nearly 500,000 homes and businesses lost power for up to 2.5 hours. It would have been worse without the efforts of California citizens who voluntarily cut their power use by thousands of megawatts.
Part of that cut came from Om Connect, a virtual power plant composed of 500,000 households.
Om Connect is one of a number of companies called aggregators, which pool the small energy reduction potential of many thousands of homes and businesses into a marketable resource. Sophie Lubin is Om Connect's director of product and virtual vampire wrangler extraordinaire. She says the main issue is not how much energy vampire devices waste. It's more about their feeding habits.
When people use energy is way more important than how much they use.
When the demand for electricity is high, Om Connect members give the grid the equivalent of a transfusion. But instead of injecting energy in, they suck demand out. You could call them demand pyres, because that's what they do. They're extracting the need for electricity from the grid.
And they do it often, not just when the grid is about to crash. Because the timely extraction of demand is one of the cheapest and fastest ways to close the state's dirtiest power plants. Sophie explains it in this way.
People often are like, I'm going to get an electric car. And they feel absolved of the fact that they're not using fossil fuel. And the problem, of course, is when they plug that electric car in, they're plugging it into a grid that is, especially at certain times, relying on fossil fuels.
So it's not just a matter of what you plug in, but when.
The sun shines the most in the middle of the day. That is not when most people are plugging in and running their dishwashers and doing laundry. They're doing all that stuff when they wake up in the morning and when they go to sleep or have dinner at night. We have this imbalance, basically, between when people are wanting to use energy and when there is a lot of renewables on the grid. And so one solution, of course, is to just have a lot of batteries.
California is moving in that direction, but they're behind schedule. So much so that they had to extend the lives of 3 gas-fired peaker plants that were scheduled to shut down.
Peakers, so named because they only operate when demand is at its peak, are 4 times dirtier than regular gas power plants.
To close all of its peaker plants, California would need around 1.5 gigawatts of energy storage.
Or they could rethink the traditional MO of oversizing our entire electrical system for something that only happens a few hours a day, and instead enlist Om Connect's coven of demand pyres and others like them to lower the peak.
That's why what we do is so, so valuable. We're helping people move the energy and when they use it, as opposed to waiting for when we can bottle the sun into a box and plug into it.
I joined Om Connect a few years ago and can report that the process is quick and painless. There's no morning after lethargy or uncontrollable urges to stick your finger in a socket.
Anybody in California can join Om Connect for free. When you do, you get a text message a couple times a week.
We call energy saving events Om Hours. And we say, hey, tomorrow at 7 o'clock, power down, use as little energy as you can. And then we award them cash and prizes. And a lot of people feel like it is too good to be true. How could I possibly get paid for not doing something? This negative unuse of energy could somehow be rewarding for me. But it is, in fact, real.
In electricity markets, the goal is for demand and supply to balance. So generating electricity is one side of the coin, and decreasing the need for electricity is the other.
Selling the aggregated unuse of electricity is profitable because it's cheaper than making electricity, and the price goes up when demand is high.
We are a tiny team. We're less than 30 people, and we have over 500,000 people using our platform. Our operating costs are very small compared to what we're contributing to the grid when they consider us a resource of energy, which is non-energy.
Similar programs run by utilities give customers a flat bill credit for participation.
But none of them are actually awarding cash the way that we are. Nobody else is saying, we're going to directly take the money that we're getting for these contracts of negative energy and redistributing them to all the people who actually did the non-using of energy.
The profit sharing generally ranges from $1 to $200 per household.
There are also prizes. Like today, the biggest energy saver wins an Energy Star washer and dryer. And the biggest saver this summer got their electric bills paid for life. But it's not all about the money.
Here's what happened during the heat wave last month.
We had like an ohm hour every day for, I think, 4 or 5 days, and they were multiple hours long each. And our community would write us, sign me up for the next one. I'm here for it. You know, it's been a little tough, but let's do this. Day after day after day. It was amazing to see the community that we have come together in the way that they did. Our communication channels through text message, through email, are surprisingly powerful. I believe in them and I believe in what we're doing, but it's always amazing when we actually are like, hey guys, this one really, really matters.
Running around the house turning things off isn't for everyone. For one thing, you have to plan ahead.
The energy market forecasts energy needs a day ahead, and OhmConnect sells its megawatts to meet that projected need.
So you get a text a day ahead saying there's going to be an ohm hour tomorrow from 5 to 6 p.m. And then you have to remember not to use energy at 5 p.m. a whole day later. My household was so bad at this that our energy use even went up.
That's your subconscious saying, flick that light switch. You're not the boss of me.
We're supposed to be inspiring people, not reveling in our failures.
A lot of people love the fact that they get 24 hours notice because it gives them enough time to think about, when was dinner going to be and what are my kids doing and is my husband going to be home or not? Yes, we could do a barbecue. Ways of effectively planning to not use energy, which is really how people can be really successful at this. For you, that was just too far away because you're like, oh yeah, maybe I'll remember tomorrow to do that thing. And so we have this other way of helping people save energy, which is more immediate and automatic, and that's through smart devices.
If you have a smart thermostat, OhmConnect can turn down your air conditioning. They can also communicate with your dumb appliances using smart plugs.
It's like a plug that goes on the outlet in your wall and it has Wi-Fi in it that basically lets us shift the energy in hundreds of thousands of people's homes right now.
So I put a smart plug on my refrigerator, which can safely be turned off for up to 4 hours without spoiling food. And I have to say that since I did that, instead of just feeling guilty when I get the message that the ohm hour is over and I didn't do anything, now what happens is that usually sometime around 7 o'clock at night, I open the refrigerator and the light is off and I feel like I'm a climate hero because this plug like remotely turned off my refrigerator. It's very gratifying.
You're like, wow, it must be an ohm hour. Grab that kombucha and shut the door, quick.
You can also put smart plugs on other energy-hungry appliances, like EV chargers.
All those types of devices can be connected to our platform. And then instead of you having to remember that tomorrow at 7, you need to power down your house, basically your house does it for you. And so if we can sort of outsource that decision-making so that you use less energy, your bills go down, you earn a little money, you save the planet, everyone collectively together can do that.
Cutting your energy use during peak times may not be as exciting as putting solar panels on your roof, but it's a quick and easy way to eliminate dirty energy from the bottom up.
A lot more people can afford a $20 plug than an electric car or a Tesla Powerwall, and that's important to the OhmConnect folks.
One of the things we pride ourselves on and feel is really important is that our platform is meant to help people impacted often the most by climate change, but who don't really get that attention. The majority of our users do not live in the Bay Area or Los Angeles area or the main cities. We're in sort of like the Fresnos and Bakersfields, the places that have bad air quality, where asthma is higher. And it's also where people have high energy bills, where people feel the pinch and where we've seen folks feel the most value. People who see it as this financial incentive, but also who are extremely motivated by climate and what's happening in their communities directly. Our platform is accessible for those sorts of people, and that feels really important for us. When you really do get a group, a specific geography excited about a product like ours, it really takes off because the word of mouth just sort of spreading it is so awesome to see.
Vampires proliferating by word of mouth. I love it.
And speaking of community, when consumers voluntarily shed thousands of megawatts during that heat wave, most of them did it for no money. Maybe paying people isn't the most powerful motivator.
The average household earns about a dollar per ohm hour. What speaks to me much louder than the dollar are the text messages I get at the end of each ohm hour saying that the grid has gone back to cleaner energy. But at the end, all it does is induce guilt if you missed it. But if you put that message at the start of the ohm hour,
Like, cut your use and we won't turn on that dirty peaker plant.
I think many more folks would get on board.
I think you're dead right. There has been a history in so many industries that money is the only thing that works. If you put money front and center and then you're doing good as a tangential, like you get people to eat the peas, but accidentally because they really ate the ice cream, you hide the veggies in the dessert kind of thing. I believe we're in a different place actually nowadays than we've been in the past around how many people actually do care just for the sake of caring. Think about the fire season that we're still very much in. I live in the Bay Area and I have never seen a day like that one Wednesday where literally never became day. And that was extremely terrifying and emotionally confusing. And I think this idea that we have to bury the doing good into the money, your point of the message that says we're about to basically pollute our planet some more, extra more than we even normally do. What are we going to do about it? Can we come together and everyone just use a little bit less energy for the next hour and we will be able to prevent an entire peaker plant or five peaker plants or however many it is from actually needing to turn on in this moment? We could either have rolling blackouts or let Ohm Connect turn down your air conditioning by a couple degrees and we'd all could be okay.
We're leaving California now and moving on to Hawaii, where they're taking virtual unpower plants to a whole new level.
We're very connected to community here. It's kind of ingrained in us that we work together. Decisions that we make affect all of us. And as an island community, we take that really seriously.
That's Forrest Frizzell, CEO of Shifted Energy, a local startup which is turning humble home water heaters into something even more helpful than demand buyers.
I think sometimes we get this stigma of moving slow, but what's really happening is we have to think through decision making and how it affects generations. So the generations that work before us and then the generations that are coming after us. And so actually in reality, you're moving quickly. If you kind of think about all the check boxes that you're going through to make sure that you're doing the right thing for your community.
Shifted Energy began as a nonprofit delivering energy efficiency to low-income renters, but soon they realized that wasn't enough.
Here is a group of people who we want to be part of this renewable energy revolution. But if you're a renter or you're lower on the socioeconomic scale, you don't own your roof, you live in multifamily housing, how does that apply?
Well, we don't all have Teslas, but everyone has a water heater. And in Hawaii, the majority are electric, the old style resistance types with a tank.
The water heater was something that we saw that was pervasive in multi-unit rental locations. It's really the cheapest form of water heating. And unless you are running air conditioning or heating at a constant rate, it's going to be the first or second largest consumer of energy in the home.
So Shifted Energy developed a way to turn those water heaters into Wear water heaters. An electrician simply inserts a small controller in line with the electrical supply, a procedure that takes about 20 minutes, flips the breaker to deliver power.
Okay, I'm not sure I'd like to hear that every time I take a bath. Who wants a Wear heater anyway?
Well, for one, Yo Kawanami, Director of Customer Energy Resources at Hawaiian Electric, the utility serving 95% of Hawaiian Islanders.
Oahu, Maui, Lanai, Molokai, and Hawaii Island. Overall, for all five islands, we're at about 28% renewable now.
The rest comes from fuel oil and coal, transported thousands of miles from Asia and South America. That gives Hawaii the highest electricity prices in the U.S., making the utility and its customers highly motivated to end their fossil fuel dependence.
Hawaiian Electric and Shifted Energy are partnering to install Wear water heater devices on thousands of residential water heaters as a way to speed that transition.
Wear water heaters help with the same mismatch problem we saw in California. Yo's colleague Jennifer Baker explains.
At the end of the day, from like about 5 to 9, when residents are coming home, they're cooking, they're showering, they're doing all that type of stuff, it's useful to then turn off water heater to avoid having to turn on peaker units.
But here's where Ohm-style turnoffs and Wear water heaters part ways.
When there's overgeneration in the middle of the day, then it definitely helps to have water heaters that we can turn on to use that energy heat up the water and have thermal storage.
So instead of devouring their prey under a full moon, werewater heaters feast at high noon. And instead of turning from humans to wolves, werewater heaters turn from appliances that heat your bath to thermal batteries. Or if we wanted to stick to the blood transfusion analogy, they're like blood banks. You make a deposit before you have surgery, and if you start to exsanguinate on the operating table, it's there for you. We asked Shifted Energy's Forrest Frizzell which analogy he prefers, blood banks or werewolves. He likes blood banks.
I like that analogy. Blood banks are considered essential work, and every single person in the entire world could be an essential worker giving blood. And it's the same. Everybody can be essential in getting ourselves off of fossil fuel. So you could be a renter with a water heater and you can do that. You can get us there.
The guys just aren't feeling the Halloween spirit.
Werewolves and water heaters is quite a stretch. I mean, they're not wolves. They're not nocturnal. They're not mythical.
But here's something werewolves and werewater heaters do have in common. They're both super fast. Another attribute which helps get more renewable energy onto the grid.
We have a lot of solar generation here in Hawaii, not just utility solar, which is more controllable. We have a lot of residential solar, but we don't have any real control to that.
Remember that a healthy grid has to match supply and demand. So when the wind drops or clouds pass over the sun, something has to compensate. Or as an energy expert once explained it to us,
the whole thing goes kablooey.
Especially a grid Hawaii size as an island. Unlike in the mainland where you can wheel in backup power from different states. So having at least some kind of control with a load that we can turn on or turn off is very helpful.
That fine-tuning needs to happen faster than a mere mortal grid operator can respond.
Shifted Energy's smart controllers sense what's going on in the water heater and its power supply. A series of algorithms generates a response in milliseconds.
For the other services, if you wanted to do a load build because you saw there was too much renewables on the grid, or you wanted to do a load reduction because you saw too much demand and not enough supply, and that would come from the grid operator. But in terms of frequency, because of the speed that that frequency event is happening, you want to have that happen at the device level.
You get the rapid speed because each device detects and acts independently. Think of it like a reflex. When the doctor taps your knee and your foot kicks, that message doesn't go through your brain, or the grid operator in this case.
It's got a local response because it's responding to a disturbance at that actual area on the grid versus you've got a problem out east and then the peaker plant is responding on the west side. That's not going to be instantaneous, whereas the interactive water heaters that we have sensors that are literally sensing the frequency on the grid at that particular area. It's responding right away.
Each individual controller is constantly sensing what the frequency level is. And if it drops, we give it 10 cycles, which is 10 milliseconds to make the decision. On the 11th, we make that decision. And on the 12th millisecond, we turn off. And so at a fleet level, we can really reduce, in terms of megawatts, the number of devices that are connected to the grid and help to stabilize that frequency event.
You can have a great product. It's not enough to get someone to hand over control of their water heater.
As we learn more about the specific culture of a building, then we'll adapt the way that we do our outreach. Because it's typically lower income, it's analog. We're not doing a lot of digital approach. It's really getting in there. It's building trust. And then once that trust has been built, word kind of spreads. People in Hawaii typically understand what's happening with solar because there's been such a push here. So most people understand and they're right on board, especially when you say, hey, you're helping us get off of fossil fuel. Just the fact that we could explain to them how they could play a role in Hawaii's 2045 quest to be off of fossil fuel, many of them had never thought about what their role was as part of that. And when you sit down and explain to them what we're doing and why, man, they were really keenly excited. We were installing in a neighborhood and there were folks that were so excited. They went and made their own copies of our flyer and started recruiting their family and their neighbors for us. And we didn't even ask them to do that. When you can see the smile and the connection of how do I participate? How do I relate to this? And they see themselves it means a lot for us, and that's really has kept us energized.
There's one thing that could cool their enthusiasm pretty quickly.
Yeah, running out of hot water.
If they're getting cold showers, that's not a happy customer. You want them to forget that you're even there other than that bill credit they're receiving.
That's another thing the smart controllers do.
The algorithm is learning the water usage patterns of those customers, creating a profile for that customer and estimating, okay, how much can we charge or discharge at a certain time for this particular person. You hopefully have happier customers because you don't have to tap into a particular water heater when so-and-so is going to need hot water.
All this smartness didn't come quickly.
We did many pilots to make sure we were comfortable with the technology. 3 homes, 50, and then up to 500. We used to test 1 hour at a time, but we gradually increased it.
And there were some kinks to work out. Like at first, the controllers relied on customers' Wi-Fi.
Many customers, they change their passwords and they forget that our water heater system is relying on that.
When people moved out, you'd have to talk to the new tenant about what their password was. Cats knock gateways off their plug, you name it.
Now controllers have their own cellular connections.
There were some problems the technology couldn't fix.
The team over there is very good. They try to maintain hot water for the customers at all times. And during our pilot, they get a complaint about cold water. So they investigated what's going on. Turns out this family of four, every single one of them draws a hot water tub every single evening, emptying out the tank. Regardless of our involvement or not, the water heater tank that this apartment had, it was just not feasible for these four people doing what they were doing. So we had a laugh that that's not in our control. We cannot help with that.
So how long will water stay hot with the power off?
That depends on where you are. In some places where water tanks are large and heavily insulated, water can remain hot with the water heater off for up to 16 hours.
Here in Hawaii, where the temperatures don't fluctuate much between 75 and 85 throughout the year, there's not as much insulation around the water heater. We don't have basements. We don't really have attics. There's a limitation to space.
To get that long duration of heat storage, you also have to raise the water temperature.
But when you do that, there is an additional need to put on a mixing valve and to ensure that customers don't get scalded. What we've been trying to do is use the resources that are already there.
In the typical Hawaiian home water heater, water stays hot for 4 hours without power.
So 4 hours of not using power is equivalent to how much energy storage?
We get about 1 kW of capacity per water heater. We need about 1,000 water heaters for a megawatt. You get outside of Hawaii, and actually that becomes much richer. And that's because in most locations, groundwater is colder, water heaters are larger, you have more extreme temperature changes. And so this is a bad analogy, but I'm going to use it. It's kind of like Uber or Airbnb, where you have an extra room where you have your car sitting there and you have time and you're going to use this resource to earn money. With these water heaters, especially in colder winter peaking climates, you have all this excess capacity that's sitting within that water heater that you can use. And so we actually think it's less water heaters to get there in some of these regions than what we are experiencing here in Hawaii with a warmer climate and warmer groundwater.
Now that the pilot phase is complete, Shifted Energy is enrolling 2,500 residential customers to provide 2.5 megawatts of Shifted Energy. But that's just the beginning.
There's hundreds of thousands of electric water heaters just on Oahu alone.
Hawaii requires new buildings to have solar water heaters. Heat pump water heaters use half the energy. It would seem like resistance water heaters could be on the way out. Do they really have a future?
The new law doesn't apply to multifamily or existing homes, and Forrest says the lower price of resistance heaters still gives them an edge with builders and consumers. Also, major manufacturers are now producing smart versions and dumb ones with ports to plug in smart controllers, eliminating the need for an electrician.
How big is this? What percentage of Hawaii's energy storage needs could water heaters supply?
Even if we got all the water heaters on the island, I'd say single digits. Getting to 100% renewable, it's not going to just be one silver bullet technology, we need multiple things to get us there.
Energy experts estimate that smart shifting of electricity demand over the next 5 years could lower the peak a clean grid needs to scale by 213 gigawatts. Take this with a grain of salt in your candy corn because I'm not an engineer, but according to my calculations, that's the equivalent of 3,280 peaker plants.
And the beautiful part is that our household appliances are already there,
just waiting for us to get smart enough to use them. If you live in California and want to join Ohm Connect, or in Hawaii and want to sign up your water heater, we've got links for you at our website, cool-solutions.org. If you live somewhere else, don't despair. Half of U.S. states have some kind of program like this, so check with your local utility. Just don't tell them you want to be a vampire. Ask about residential demand response. Have a safe, happy Halloween, and thanks for joining us. I'm Wendy Ring.
And I'm Brian Curtis, and you've been listening to Cool Solutions.
Stories of climate action from the bottom up. If you think climate change is scary and want solutions to spread faster, please find our Cool Solutions podcast and share it.
Thanks to our guests, Sophie Lubin, Yo Kawanami, Jennifer Baker, and Forrest Frizzell.
And thanks to Scott Holmes, Vic Bang, The Wimps, and Astrometrics for our music.
KABU Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KABU in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KABU Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website.